Welcome to the program for Thursday, October 4th, 2012 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today it's Industry Chatter, as we do every Thursday in the 3 o'clock hour. And my guest is Sue Tremblay. She's Managing Director of Consulting at Iron Mountain. Sue, it's great to see you on the program today. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Francis. It's great being here in beautiful Washington, D.C.
It is it looks pretty good this afternoon. I was a little unsure about it this morning, but it's turned out to be pretty good, and I'm glad you're here today. Let's start by talking about what Iron Mountain does for customers in the federal space, please.
Well, Iron Mountain is a provider of records management services and solutions. So for the government in particular, and we do this for private industry as well, but for the government in particular, we've invested in building out 4 records management centers that are NARA compliant. So those are in California, Missouri, Illinois, and Virginia. So agencies can store their physical records with us in a very secure NARA compliant environment. We also do imaging for the government, converting all those pesky papers into digital versions that then now need something done with them according to the directive, which we're going to be talking about. So plenty of that kind of work, because there's been plenty of paper in the government space, more so than in private industry. We do off-site tape vaulting. In fact, we store over 79 million tapes for customers. And we store over 450 million cubic feet of hard copy records. So we know the space well, and we really do want to engage the government more in sharing our services with them. And we do some things in solutions around managing records by way of a software solution, making sure you can tell where all your physical assets are, on-site, off-site, secure destruction, everything that has to do with records management.
What is the main difference in the records management space between the private sector and the federal government? What do government agencies have to do that companies don't have to do?
Well, mostly when it comes to storing the records, I mean, they have to be in these very secure environments with hyper controls around environmental controls, fire, water safety. I mean, they really are top of the line, climate control, because, you know, there are records that are in those facilities that could very well and transition into a permanent record, which is, of course, a record about our history that needs to be accessed for ever and ever. So I think that the requirements around that storage is more strict. Also, you know, most of the private sector records aren't permanent in their being. You know, some are, a few are, articles of incorporation, that kind of thing. But most are business records that, after time, are eligible to be destroyed because they don't have that historical intrinsic value.
And there's not such a thing with a permanent record in the federal government. We keep it forever.
Forever.
That's why it's permanent.
We keep it forever. And that's what's intriguing about this directive, too. I'm just jumping ahead a little bit, is that, you know, when you go to the National Archives and you see this introduction to what happens there, it's all about paper, right? All of the great information that is accessible to people. And now we need to be able to make sure that that same information can be accessible in electronic format.
Now, you've alluded to this directive, the Federal Records Directive, a couple of times. Lay this out for people who are familiar with it and for people who aren't familiar with it, because there's a lot there. It's like any other directive or initiative or anything that comes from government. There's a lot to it. Break it down from the perspective of somebody who's been doing this, as you have, for a long time at a very high level.
Well, I think there are great elements in the directive, and I know that from speaking with records officers and agencies, and Iron Mountain actually did conduct a survey of about 100 different records people in the federal space. I think we are all looking forward to the kind of direction that is being given in the directive. There was work done earlier in the year, end of last year, up through to the beginning of this year, by the agencies in collecting all the information that they could around their current programs to deliver to NARA. And not only did they want current state, but, you know, what is a good practice? So NARA collected all this information from multiple, over 200 agencies, processed it, and then the directive is an outcome of that. And they're essentially two goals. And they're little sentences, but they're massive in what they are trying to accomplish, right? So the first goal is really to require electronic record keeping to ensure transparency, efficiency, and accountability. And each one of those, transparency, efficiency, accountability, have a whole lot more associated with them. And then the second goal is to demonstrate compliance with federal records management statutes and regulations. And again, there are many things that need to happen to make that happen as well. In addition to the directive that's being, those goals that are given to agencies, I think what I know people wanted to hear is what NARA is going to be able to provide to them. And in this directive, NARA is very clear about what their responsibility is going to be, like providing guidance around email. So they're telling us we need to manage email, both temporary and permanent records, in electronic format, no more, you know, printing off and putting in a file cabinet. But how are you going to do that? And how are you going to do that consistently? And I know agencies, certain agencies are more mature than others, and some have already gone down that path. But now this is trying to give direction that everyone can be assured of they're doing the right thing with that particular kind of content in email. So there's a lot of work to be done, but I know from working in the private sector very frequently, with these directives in place, there is more opportunity now and more chance to actually make this happen before it's too late and we start losing some of that electronic content that really is part of our nation's heritage.
Given the differences that you outlined between the private sector requirements for record keeping and the public sector requirements, the federal government requirements, are the best practices that exist for the private sector sufficient to be applicable for the federal government, given those differences?
I think in many ways, yes. So while the federal government deals with Freedom of Information Act requests, and those are required to, the agencies are required to deliver content, whether it's physical, paper, microfiche, electronic, within a short period of time, in the private sector, they need to respond to litigation requests for electronic discovery or discovery in general. So I think there are a lot of parallels. Certainly in the directive, under the compliance goal, agencies are required to declare a senior agency official, right, an SAO. And we think that this is a fabulous, fantastic movement forward because in the private sector, certainly, success in these programs always begins at the top. And oftentimes we find that the interest in records management is really down below a level of management, of decision-making, of budget-making, of budget-getting. So this really elevates and makes the focus of records management stronger, clearer across the agency. And at that high level, because this SAO is supposed to be at a level of an assistant secretary. And we've talked to agencies who have pushed and pushed and pushed and finally been able to get that kind of awareness at a secretary level, but they are few and far between. So this really does, I think, open up some possibilities here to drive this program from the top down and hopefully drag along with that the kinds of budgets and resources and interests that most agencies haven't been able to garner from anyone to date.
Well, let's dig into this when we come back and kind of just tear it apart and put it back together again if we can. My guest is Sue Tremblay, Managing Director of Consulting at Iron Mountain. My guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in a moment.
Stop me if you've heard this one. A woman with a serious case of the sniffles goes to see her doctor. She leaves with a mammogram, an eye exam, diabetic screening, and prescription for that sniffling nose. No? We have. See, at Kaiser Permanente, our system uses the latest technology to set a new standard of connected care. So when you visit your doctor, your care team will have access to your medical history. They can see if you need to make any appointments, fill prescriptions, or if you're overdue for any potential life-saving screenings, like a mammogram. Then, they can instantly schedule one, often in the same day at the same facility. This advanced model of care has helped us achieve the highest mammogram screening rate in the Mid-Atlantic region. Okay, now stop me if you've heard this one. A member walks into a Kaiser Permanente facility. The entire staff works together to make sure that they live well, be well, and thrive. Pretty sure you've heard that one before. Not a member yet? Learn more at kp.org/midatlantic. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Attention all federal and military agencies. In March, the Australian Defense Force saved more than $150 million by using Intelsat General to put critical communications into space as a hosted payload on one of our satellites, on time and on budget. Our next hosted payload satellite launches in 2013. So if your agency needs on-time, on-budget access to space, take an example from our allies down under and look no further than Intelsat General. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General Hosted Payload Program. That's spacedelivered.com.
By combining HP 3PAR utility storage with HP ProLiant Gen 8 servers powered by the latest Intel Xeon processors, you can lower your total cost of ownership and improve project ROI. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how HP can power your data center into the future. Call GovConnection's experienced federal team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
The Commuter Info Report brought to you by Commuter Connections.
Last week, Maryland State Police announced a new law that defines what actions drivers should take when confronted with a dark intersection. The driver should stop at the white stop line and yield to any traffic in the intersection. In the week following the June derecho, commuters were confronted with dark signals and unexpected delays. Whether it's a snowstorm or a windstorm, exercising caution and courtesy can ease the stress of commuting after a disruptive weather event. I'm Dave Dildine.
These days, keeping your money is harder than ever. Some folks are even going to extremes like freezing money in blocks of ice, storing it under mattresses, hiding it under the litter box. We'd like to suggest something different, something easier. Sign up to Rideshare and save on gas. It'll help you keep your money.
Commuter Connections provides free ride matching and commuter services in the Washington metropolitan region. Sign up at commuterconnections.org. That's commuterconnections.org or call 800-745-RIDE.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Friday's Federal Drive. Is it a lover's quarrel or the start of a nasty divorce? Relations have soured between the Defense Department and Lockheed Martin. They're trying to find a way forward on the expensive F-35 program. Plus, Homeland Security is committed to building a world-class cyber workforce. We'll find out how. Those stories and more tomorrow morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Industry chatter today with Sue Tremblay, Managing Director of Consulting at Iron Mountain. And Sue, we talked in the first segment about this executive order, the presidential memorandum managing government records from November of 2011. And last month, I guess technically now it's 2 months ago because we're in October, albeit the beginning stages of October, at the end of August, the Office of Management and Budget and NARA put out a memo for the heads of agencies about records management and what the expectations are for the agencies, what NARA says it will do, and so on. And I'd like to walk through this with you and ask you to kind of deconstruct this as we go along. You mentioned that there are two goals that are outlined in the first part of this. The first one is to require electronic record keeping to ensure transparency, efficiency, and accountability. And you mentioned that there are a lot of elements that go into each of those three things. Expand on that a little bit, and let's try to dig out exactly where you think the administration's headed on each of those issues. Transparency is tricky, especially because there's still a pretty heated conversation going on surrounding transparency as a whole and trying to balance transparency with privacy. So is that a factor in this conversation about records too, or is that not as prevalent in the conversation about records?
It isn't yet. I think it's going to have to be as we dig deeper in how we're going to be able to accomplish one of the first items underneath this goal, which is to, by 2019, federal agencies will manage all permanent electronic records in an electronic format. So what we're going to need to be able to do behind that is certainly have all the agencies start looking at what they have, right? They need to know what they have before they even can determine, is it permanent or is it temporary? And we've been doing some blogging at Iron Mountain, and one person sent a blog in the other day about, you know, has anybody really stopped to consider how big this all is? Forget about the privacy issues around transparency or accountability. Just understanding where all that data is, legacy data on tapes, you know, who knows where that is? Structured records, those things that are in formal applications, unstructured records that are sitting around on file shares or in SharePoint sites, social media, big data. I mean, to stop and really reflect on where all this information is in order to then take action on it is a big part of what's going to have to happen sooner than later. I mean, 2019 seems a long way away, but that has to happen closer to now.
Okay, it seems to me then, when you lay it out that way, that there are three potential possibilities for attacking this. There is the inventory approach, as you alluded to, where we stop and we figure out everything that we've got. And we go around and we look for where all these records may be hidden, turn over every rock. That's one. The other is that as we find things, kind of the way I clean my garage out, as I come to an item, I decide what to do with it and then do that. And then as I go to the next thing, I decide what to do with that. That's another approach. The other possibility, I guess, is that maybe those are 20th century approaches that we used when we had hard copy records. And maybe it's time to really rethink how we do all of this. And maybe those ways of managing records aren't appropriate for the 21st century and for a digital environment. You're looking like you're agreeing with me on that.
Shaking my head. That's absolutely right. So one of the things that I find encouraging about the directive is where NARA is stepping up to say that they are going to be reaching out to partners in the private sector to really help understand what kind of automated tools, technology is out there to help with this process. So there are auto classification tools that are getting more mature in their ability to look through tons of data and start bucketing them, clustering them, putting them together in like categories in order to then say these would be this kind of record.
When you say auto classification, you're not referring to classification from a security perspective. You're referring to it from a categorization perspective.
Exactly.
Am I right?
Content retention
okay,
perspective.
Good.
Right.
Got
and
it.
I, you know, I appreciate that. There are two ways to look at classification. But this is around understanding what the content is, therefore understanding, is it permanent? Is it temporary? What do I need to do with it? But those are not easy tools. You have to set up rules. There's a lot of machine learning involved. So I think NARA's stepping up and saying, you know, we understand this is a complex issue and the private sector hasn't nailed it yet. We need help because that is the kind of help that agencies are going to need to do what they're being tasked to do. Not only for going forward, right? Because we're creating records today by the terabytes, but all of that that went before. And then you throw into the mix that NARA's asking that agencies should consider the benefit of digitizing their paper records, right? So especially those that are permanent. So look through and determine what paper's permanent, and is it cost-effective to, and because of its historical value, do I need to then, in tandem with this looking back, trying to sort out what my e-environment looks like, now I'm creating these new electronic records, right, from this physical copy. They need to be indexed. I need to know what to do with them. I need to know what format they should be in order to then transfer them to NARA.
The discussion about permanent versus temporary is one that we could probably do a whole hour just on that. But are we refining successfully, do you think, the objectivity of what's permanent and what's temporary? That seemed to be, for a long time, more an art than a science.
That's a great question, because in all of our discussions with the agencies, everyone wanted more definition, or in fact, maybe more authority to handle their temporary records, because the temporary records are really the business records, right? The HR records, the normal business records that have in schedules a retention rule that says you can get rid of these in 6 years. But it's complicated, and so that's not happening. And I find it interesting that there isn't a lot said about temporary records in the directive. Although it is said that by December 31st, 2017, there's going to be a review of the general schedules to make it easier to manage records, all right, which bigger buckets, and that's a term that's become more popular, in that most of the agency schedules are massive, and it's hard for a human being to determine what class to put a record in, let alone a machine. So we need more distinction between classes, right? So that's something that they're saying is going to happen. But one of the things that's intriguing is that they are saying that they're thinking of expanding the number of permanent record series to reduce scheduling and appraisal burdens, which is interesting, because in the private sector, you know, the goal would be to not keep anything that you don't really need to keep longer than you have to. And the way I read this is that maybe we're crossing the line in some instances about what category of records really rises to the level of being historical and being kept for permanent periods of time, right? But maybe making some classes that aren't so important permanent, because it's easier to manage them that way.
My guest on the program today is Sue Tremblay, Managing Director of Consulting at Iron Mountain. And we'll continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose. We'll be right back.
To successfully win and deliver on federal and state health IT initiatives, you need to align with the right strategic partners. Tech Systems Government Services offers dedicated healthcare IT teams who provide practical IT services and IT workforce management expertise to integrators in federal, state, and local governments. Each year, Tech Systems deploys nearly 6,000 specialized government and healthcare IT professionals to support the design, development, and implementation of key programs. From integrated eligibility and health exchange programs for state governments to major initiatives inside civilian and military health organizations, Tech Systems enables you to build stronger IT teams and achieve desired mission outcomes. Whether you support HHS, VA, or MHS programs, or programs across all 50 states, Tech Systems' national presence and ability to assemble and manage teams of highly qualified health IT talent can help you win and successfully deliver on mission-critical programs. Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at techsystems.com. T-E-K Systems.
Do you hear that? That's a cuttlefish. Ars Raytheon sees it the future of infrared technology. By studying how cephalopods manipulate light, we're driving innovation in IR imaging. With systems that are lighter, use less power, and deliver revolutionary clarity. After all, when your mission is innovation, your inspiration can come from anywhere. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission. Do you hear that? That's something we make safer and more efficient every day. Raytheon helps manage two-thirds of the world's airspace, modernizing, integrating, and supporting today's air traffic systems. For decades, we've continued to innovate as the nation's airways have continued to grow. After all, when your mission is transforming air travel, the sky's the limit. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
Rotavirus around the world. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. People have a lot in common worldwide, even when they don't want to. At the National Institutes of Health, Dr. Roger Glass has been studying the most common cause of childhood diarrhea, rotavirus.
It's a huge problem. It's a universal problem. All kids have it. Rich or poor, black or white, Chinese or American or African, we all share the same common infection.
In the United States, rotavirus used to cause 50 to 70,000 hospitalizations and dozens of deaths each year before vaccines were introduced. Dr. Glass says the hospitalization rate was cut 95% since then. Studies show the vaccine is also effective in poor countries, but more global support is needed to reach every child. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Calling all government, military, and defense industry executives, the Association of the United States Army invites you to attend its 58th annual meeting and exposition.
Held October 22nd through the 24th at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, AUSA's annual meeting is one of the largest land warfare forums in the world.
Companies will gather to display the latest defense technology, and forums will be held for soldiers, family, government defense civilians, and industry executives.
Admission is free but limited to qualified persons. For information, please visit 2012 AUSA Annual Meeting.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest on Industry Chatter today, Sue Tremblay, Managing Director of Consulting at Iron Mountain. And we're talking about a directive from the Office of Management and Budget, the Federal Records Directive, and this coming out a little bit more than a month ago. Two main goals, Sue, that we've started to talk about. The timeline for the first goal, which is electronic record keeping and the requirement of that, I think is a lot tighter than maybe people are aware of. We talked about the 2019 deadline, the end of that year. This says all permanent electronic records in federal agencies managed electronically to the fullest extent possible. But there's a closer deadline than that. December 31st, 2016, agencies will manage both permanent and temporary email records in an accessible electronic format. And this is something that to the average person from the outside looking in, including some members of Congress who I heard go off about this at a couple of different hearings over the years, this seems like something that should be fairly easy to do, and it's proven for the agencies to be everything but, it seems. Is that fair to say?
I'd say that's fair. I mean, the way that email's been handled has been all over the place, right? Certain agencies are still into the print and file, you know, creating paper from email. I think fundamentally, the challenge with email is knowing what's a record, what's not, what to do with it. And not all of the agencies have e-schedules. I know that I've worked with some that have developed those e-schedules to really nail down, you know, content perhaps over format, and to get those e-schedules then approved by NARA. They probably stand a better chance of understanding than what's permanent, what's temporary, and then what to do with those temporary records.
And for somebody who doesn't swim in this pool every day, explain what an e-schedule is. That is that the difference Is that the clarification of what should be kept and what doesn't have to be kept?
That's right. So the schedules today for most agencies, I think, are very much paper-based, and they talk about all the paper records that have been created, maintained, received since, you know, the inception. But there's a whole new category of electronic records. There are databases. There's social media. There are YouTube clips. There's email. There's instant messaging. There's chatter. And those have to be looked at for what they are, for what they mean to the agency, and what they mean to the historical record, to then declare this type of communication is deemed permanent because it really does have, again, historical value. Therefore, we'll do this with it. This type is not. Therefore, we don't need to treat it as permanent, and we can make some disposition decisions about it that doesn't mean that we need to send it to the archive.
Are those decisions, if you have that schedule in place, then I guess the implication is that you can make those decisions almost as you go and not have to do what I think most agencies wind up doing, which is every once in a while we have this huge bushel basket full of stuff that we have to go through rather than doing it on an ongoing basis.
Yes and no, I think. You know, one of the other things that NARA is saying that they're going to do before too long, I guess, December 31st, 2015, is to improve that records disposition authority process that would allow then that ability to, with confidence, destroy records that I think a lot of agencies are still, even though it appears like they can, you know, they're not sure exactly what they need from NARA to say, yeah, it's okay to get rid of this record because it's not a permanent record, because it's lived out its useful life and now can be done with.
Okay.
It's a harder decision, I think, for agencies because of that question mark that you raised earlier about, you know, really, what do we do with those temporary records? Are they ours? Are they NARA's? What do we do with them?
We're kind of going all over the map here, but this is a fascinating thing because there is so much uncertainty, maybe too strong a word, but there are just a lot of open-ended questions that still remain here. You talked about the 2015 goal that NARA is going to set for improving this current request for records disposition authority process. Trying to figure out what is and what isn't a record has been pretty challenging. The goal that NARA is held to right below the one that you're talking about in this direct, and we'll get a link to this up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. But the archives by December 31st, 2017, is expected to overhaul the general record schedules. And you mentioned that a little bit earlier. That seems like an awfully long time and seems like it may be kind of at the end of the process. And that sounds like a tool that would be useful for the agencies to have a lot further up toward the front of this process rather than more toward the end.
I agree with you. There are other places here where agencies need to make sure, for example, by the end of 2016, that the paper and non-electronic records schedules have to be refreshed and submitted to NARA, which seems a long time from now since we're still in 2012, I think, right? So, you know, when I look at this from working with many private sector companies over the last, you know, 10 years, we always want to start with a foundation. And the foundation to records management is having a sound policy and having that schedule that's up-to-date, representative of all aspects of the business, that you can then start making decisions from. So I agree with you. I mean, I'm sure NARA has its reasons for doing this, but that does seem to be far out when we're asking agencies to do things close in 2016, 2019. I mean, by end of 2013, agencies are supposed to begin implementation plans to achieve that all permanent records need to be in electronic record format. Well, how do they really determine what's permanent, what's temporary, if they're uncertain of what that newer schedule is going to look like? So I'm not sure what kind of autonomy the agencies may have in going forward and doing those sorts of refreshes to their schedules to make them less granular, larger buckets. I know certain of certain agencies have done that and have submitted and been accepted by NARA to go forward with that. So it may be that, you know, they'll still be marching down this one way, and then three, four years later have to sync up with and take advantage of what NARA may be positioning by way of their general schedule. And one of the things that does, I mean, is going to have to be foremost, I think, in terms of caution, is that if NARA is going to transition some set of temporary series from that to permanent, then, you know, we've got to be careful in the agency schedules too. If that's going to happen down the line, how do we know what we might be able to get rid of today when 2 years from now it's going to be classified as permanent?
I want to pursue that a little bit more, the concept of revamping those schedules, when we come back from the break. My guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM today is Sue Tremblay, Managing Director of Consulting at Iron Mountain, and we'll continue our conversation in just a minute on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Public leaders, you can make a measurable difference in your career by obtaining Lean Six Sigma Green Belt certification through the George Washington University Center for Excellence in Public Leadership. Green Belt certification teaches you the Lean Six Sigma skills you need to successfully lead organizational improvement efforts. You'll learn how to collect and analyze performance data, identify and solve problems, and institute new improvement protocols. Offered jointly by the Center for Excellence in Public Leadership, a leader in providing training and development to public sector employees, and Oriel Stata Matrix, a global leader in delivering Lean Six Sigma training, this unique program is the only one designed with the public sector leader in mind. Classes begin October 29th, and team discounts are available for organizations sending multiple participants. For more information or to register, visit leadership-programs.org. That's leadership-programs.org.
70 years is a lifetime, but for one federal employee, it's just how long he's worked for the U.S. Navy. Federal News Radio talks with the man who started his naval career in 1942 as a radio inspector and who now steers billions of dollars in contracts towards small businesses. What has kept Sarkis Tatigan ticking for nearly one-third of the Navy's history? What do his coworkers think of the man they call Mr. T? See the ceremony honoring Tatigan's 70 years of service at federalnewsradio.com. Search 70 years.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Sue Tremblay of Iron Mountain is my guest on Industry Chatter, and we're getting at some of the goals of the Federal Records Directive. And one of the things that we've been talking about is the whole issue of schedules. And as you defined it, that's just determining what agencies need to keep and what they don't need to keep. And it occurs to me as I was listening to you speak in one of the earlier segments, how much technology has revolutionized this particular area of the federal government and how chaotic it has made it. Because it strikes me, correct me if I'm wrong, let's go back 25 years. It strikes me that at that time, federal agencies were limited when it came to records generation to how many employees they had and how fast they could type, because that was really about the only way to get something. Maybe at that point, fax machines were around and you could fax one to agency to another, or citizen to agency, or vice versa. But really, you were dealing with 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper, and that was pretty much the end of it. Mm-hmm. Not much beyond, maybe some tapes at that point, too. Now, as you mentioned in the last segment, there's 80 kajillion different kinds of things and different ways that they can be stored. One of the questions I asked you during the break, you referenced YouTube videos. A lot of agencies are doing that now. Is it good enough just to have a link to where the thing is on YouTube, or can we, maybe shouldn't we bank on the fact that Google will have YouTube up forever, that somebody can always go and find that? So then do we need, those are the questions that it seems to me NARA's going to have to get at with some of these schedules. And that's why I went where I did at the end of our last segment, which is that probably should be things that agencies know now rather than 3 to 5 years into this process. Is that fair to say, do you think?
I think it is fair to say. And I think it comes back to, again, NARA's commitment to partner up with you know, vendors, with these external sources to understand what does happen with that. Because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, as a records manager and as an archivist, I am both. For me, it comes down to content over format. So are some of those YouTube clips really records? Probably not, but some of them might be. If the secretary of an department is saying something of note to a certain audience, then yeah, it's archival. So what do we do with it? You're right. Do we get it back and lock it down, put a wrapper around it, and convert it to some format that we know somebody can read 100 years from now? Do we rely on, as you said, Google to be the custodian of that for us going forward? Those are all things that, you know, as you dig deeper, get more and more complex. One of the bloggers that responded to some of the talk we were having around the directive said, you know, nobody's really thought of all those contractors too. You know, so here we've got the YouTube clips and we've got Facebook postings and whatever else, but we also have a whole group of federal contractors who create, maintain records of the government. How do we push all of these agency requirements down into those contractors and start writing, grandfathering things into contracts about how they should be managing records going forward?
Well, that was going to be my question, is how is that addressed in contracts now, if at all?
I suspect it's there some of the time and not there others of the time.
Depending on who thinks of it when they're creating
exactly,
the contracts,
right.
I suppose.
And on how closely affiliated records officers might be with purchasing agents to write that into a contract. I know in the private sector, we've gotten smarter about that, you know, you are the custodian of my records. I need to have access to them. You need to comply with my rules for how long you need to keep them. But, you know, this isn't just within the agency's four walls here in D.C. It's, you know, the agency has many locations across the United States, uses many contractors. We're all dealing in government records. So how do we make it all happen? And, you know, you mentioned paper, and, you know, paper's huge. You've seen stores. We, like I said, we store millions and millions of cubic feet of records, but you can't see all those terabytes and zettabytes and whatever other kind of byte that goes beyond, you know, how many ever zeros and a decimal point. But they're out there, and we're now saying we need to get control over them. And I think this goes back to our discussion about how technology is going to have to factor into that and how NARA could potentially work to make, through the general schedules, perhaps make that easier for agencies to do rather than agency by agency trying to figure out how to potentially use technology to help with that.
There's a million more things we could get into, but there is one aspect of the Federal Records Directive I wanted to cover before our time is up, which it just about is. So when we come back, I'd like to talk about this concept of a senior agency official and what he or she's going to have to do, and maybe what the attributes for an agency leader who's got to figure out who that person's going to be by November 15th, a little bit more than a month from now. That name has to be available to OMB. So we'll talk about that when we come back in just a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Sue Tremblay. She's Managing Director of Consulting at Iron Mountain, and we'll wrap up our conversation in just a moment.
Tice, chief counterintelligence expert at CERT Insider Threat Center, commented during the panel discussion titled, "The Accidental Insider Threat, Is Your Organization Ready?" Brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton.
What is a malicious insider? We define that as an employee or a contractor or someone who has authorized access to an organization's systems and networks and uses that access to create harm or damage or something that's inappropriate against organizational policies. So the unintentional would be the lack of the intent.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen. In today's ever-changing environment, effective cybersecurity takes more than simply implementing IT solutions. Whether the threat is deliberate or accidental, from an inside or outside source, Booz Allen Hamilton's holistic approach enables organizations to adopt a remediation strategy that most effectively addresses their security requirements and risk profile. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Turkey's military struck targets inside of Syria yesterday after a bomb went off, killing five civilians in a residential area in Turkey close to the border with Syria. The Pentagon responded strongly to the activity. Spokesman George Little said in a statement, quote, "This is yet another example of the depraved behavior of the Syrian regime and why it must go." He said, "We regret the loss of life and continue to monitor the situation closely." I'm J.J. Green.
Every day, drug smuggling and violence threaten America's southwest border. Border Patrol agents need to identify and track moving targets more than 7 miles away. Only General Dynamics has built the tower system that keeps watch over 40,000 miles of U.S. coastline. Only EADS has installed systems that protect more than 8,000 miles of national land border worldwide. Together, they are the right team to protect the nation's borders. Learn more at borderdetection.com.
By combining HP 3PAR utility storage with HP ProLiant Gen 8 servers powered by the latest Intel Xeon processors, you can lower your total cost of ownership and improve project ROI. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how HP can power your data center into the future. Call GovConnection's experienced federal team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
Pending legislation, federal budget cuts, contracting efficiencies, contract management best practices, acquisition trends, and the relationship of government and industry will be discussed at NCMA's upcoming 31st Annual Government Contract Management Conference, November 5th and 6th in Washington, D.C. Hear from Ted Leonsis, CEO of Monumental Sports and Entertainment, Frank Kendall, Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, and General George Casey, former U.S. Army Chief of Staff. Learn more at ncmahq.org.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Sue Tremblay, Managing Director of Consulting at Iron Mountain, my guest on Industry Chatter today. We've been talking throughout the program about the Federal Records Directive, President Obama in 2011 releasing an executive order about records, and at the end of August, the Office of Management and Budget and NARA partnering on more full guidance about it. One of the elements of this, Sue, that we've touched on a little bit is the designation of a senior agency official for records, the SAO. And this directive says that this person will have broader agency-wide responsibilities with respect to records management. The deadline for each agency to designate somebody as the SAO is coming up fast. It's November 15th, so the middle of next month. Not much time left. If somebody is still in the selection process, based on your experience in this field, what are the good attributes or the good work experience or the good background for a candidate to have to be a good choice to be the SAO at my agency?
Okay, so chances are someone who is a senior official at the assistant secretary level or its equivalent is not a records manager, records officer.
And that comment that you just made is part of the requirement of this.
It is.
So that's verbatim what this person has to be to start with.
And they must be located in the organization, which means they can't really go out and find somebody else to do this for them. So the kind of person that I would think needs to be in this place is someone who knows the agency, knows the players, has that voice of authority, who can draw on then records officers to learn more about, as well as NARA and other, and I know there's going to be an SAO team, but to learn more about records management as they work their way into this. So, you know, whether this person comes from IT, I mean, let's face it, we're moving to a digital government, right?
And that IT seems to be the element that's the toughest nut for the agencies to crack.
It is.
Right?
And you know, there has historically not been really tight relationships between records management, records officials, and IT. So this is, I think, a good point in time to really start shifting that responsibility. Legal, FOIA officers, I mean, they know about records. They know what the responsibilities around being able to produce records would be. Compliance, but, you know, that's probably more of a private sector place to go. But ultimately, someone who's interested in this has a voice of authority, is a good communicator, and is going to be able to be interested enough to learn all the aspects of this and make it happen through their organization.
There's a tremendous amount more that I would love to cover with you soon. We're just completely out of time, but I'm very grateful for you coming. I've really enjoyed this, and this is a topic that doesn't get probably as much attention as it should, especially based on some of the deadlines we talked about today.
That's right, Francis. Well, it's been great being here with you.
Thanks for coming in today. Sue Tremblay's Managing Director of Consulting at Iron Mountain. This conversation will be archived at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. You can hear it there later this afternoon. And hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose is right around the corner on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.